Don't just bring complaints, but bring solutions. Everybody in the world can point to something negative. That's not creative and that's not innovative.
Your boss doesn't need more to do and more problems to fix. And often, if your boss is really busy, they might be likely to accept any kind of halfway decent proposal. So it's an opportunity for you to shine and to be a problem solver, but don't just drop problems in your boss's lap.
Hey, welcome back to the Next Peak Podcast. I am your co-host, Clint Herndon. This is the podcast where we help you redefine success and achieve goals that are actually important to you based on research and real life stories. Today, we are talking about how to grow in your profession, how to come in as a professional and launch your career. These are the skills that you probably should have been taught in school, but maybe you weren't. And we've compiled some information that we want to share with you. I am here with my co-host, Dr. Parker Houston, who's going to kick us off with a real-life tale of some do's and don'ts of the professional world. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. And this is such an important topic. This is something, I'm glad we're talking about this. I know it's something that is near and dear to your heart. And it's something I think both of us probably wish that we had known 20 years ago. And so this is our message primarily to the up-and-coming workforce. Like if you're in college and you're just about to enter the workforce or getting a professional job, these are things you're going to want to know. I'm sure of it. So let me start with a story about when I first became a manager. This was 2009. This was about 12 years ago. I had my first management job and I got my first taste of what people are like as team members or employees. And I had this particular woman that I really, really liked. Fantastic sense of humor. Really, really funny. I really, really enjoyed working with her in that regard. But there were some other things that she did as a team member that drove me nuts and made it very difficult to really appreciate her. And so what happened was that this person was always offering to take things off my plate or help out, but at the same time was very unreliable, would show up late to work, would dump work on her coworkers, was really not very apologetic on that, often would call in on like Fridays. And because of that, I had to go do her patient caseload and see clients. And so this was a very frustrating experience with somebody that I otherwise really, really liked, but her workplace behavior dramatically took away from her value as a team member. And so today we're going to be talking about some things that you can do that will get you noticed by your boss rapidly, that will help you be top of mind for your boss and probably help you get promoted in the long term too. So you might just be thinking about getting a job, but these things will also help you get promoted. So why should people listen to this? Well, if you want to get hired or promoted, this will be important for you. And I want to recommend a really cool resource. There's a book called The Essential Guide to Hiring and Being Hired. I've used this in job interviews for myself when I'm trying to get hired. And I've also used it in hiring lots of people. The guy's name is Lou Adler. I think he was a headhunter and a professional hiring person for companies, like a consultant for 30 or 35 years. So he's got a ton of wisdom. I think he had more than 2,000 or 3,000 hires that he helped to facilitate. And what he says in there is that early on in life, people establish a predictable pattern of workplace behavior. So they go into the workplace and often they kind of stay the same in terms of how they act at work and what kind of habits. You know, Clint, you and I often talk about habits. Well, today we're going to talk about what habits should you have in the workplace so that you get noticed.
Yeah, and we've done an episode on hiring recently, actually just a couple of weeks ago. And so this is kind of the flip side of that, because as a hiring manager, you're looking for specific things and you want to make sure you take your time and do these things. But now we want to speak to those, like you were saying, Parker, just about that are coming into the workforce, maybe for the first time, or maybe trying to return to the workforce and trying to get that edge up on their competition. Because the idea is this: schools and training classes that you go to are meant to teach you technical skills. You know, if I'm hiring an accountant, I want somebody that knows how to do accounting. But what school doesn't teach you anymore, maybe it never did, I don't know. I think I acquired a lot of my skills from my parents, but what these schools lack is they're not teaching you life skills. They're not teaching you how to come in as a professional and to represent yourself well from the starting point. And the problem with that is if you come in and you're not doing these things well, you start out in the negative. If you come in and you didn't dress appropriately or use the wrong vernacular, or you know, you're late for work, you're going to start out in the negative. And so just to get back to zero, you've now got to do great work just to get to zero. Versus if you come into the workforce at zero, now your work starts to speak for itself and you can grow in the eyes of your supervisors and your team.
Awesome. Well, people know that we're fans of Dave Ramsey and we've been heavily influenced by a lot of his messages and practices, not just financially, but with a lot of his entree leadership material. And one of the things that he says is, it's not that hard to stand out in the workplace if you just do a couple of really important things. So we're going to be talking about what those things are. So why don't you kick us off with number one?
Yeah, I was going to share a study that I read on CBS recently. It said that 47% of college graduates could not find their first job in the field of their major. 32% never actually work in their field. And so, wow. You know, there's a really... statistics are subjective, right? We depends on the facts that are going into it. And so when I started reading this study, one of the things that I noticed they were leaving out was, what were the majors of study first? Because if you have an engineering degree or an accounting degree, or you know, in a science and you go into nursing or something like that, there's a ton of demand and it would be hard to not at least have an opportunity in that field versus something like, you know, underwater basket weaving or something like that, that isn't maybe a marketable skill.
Hey, that was my major.
That's why you went on to get your doctorate. And then I think the other contributing factor is this, that the idea that we're talking about today, and that's that a lot of people don't know how to be a professional and they come into the interview process incorrectly, they're unprepared. And then when they start their job, they're already behind the eight ball, even if they even make it that far to getting a job offer. So I want to jump right in. The first one that we have on our list, and this list is compiled from Harvard Business School study that I pulled information from, as well as Indeed, which is a great job search website. And then my good friends at BizHaven, that's a human resources outsourcing company that I actually use for my company. They helped me compile kind of the top 10 list from these sources. So number one, shouldn't surprise people, but it does. And I think both Parker and I have had experience with this, is be punctual and manage your time well. In fact, one of my clients is a contractor, and he said he will win almost all of his bids because he shows up on time, he calls back when he says he's going to, and you know, and is punctual and you know, gets the job done when he says he's going to within the time constraints. And he said that puts him head and shoulders above the competition. And it really... You know, and he says, yeah, I'm a good contractor, but I'm not probably the best on the market, but I get the jobs because of these things, because I show up on time, because I do what I say I'm going to.
Yeah.
And I think that's maybe a missing ingredient in some people's schedules now, as they think, well, if 8 o'clock is my start time, that's kind of a suggestion. You know, it's around 8 o'clock. As long as I get there. And then if I work till five, I work till five. And the, you know, the door's hitting my behind as I'm walking out the door at 5 o'clock. And I can tell you as an owner of a company, it's, we look for commitment and it sends a strong message that, hey, I want to be at work when somebody shows up 5 minutes early and, you know, they're still working right up till 5 o'clock and then they're putting their stuff away instead of, I'm going to show up. I'm going to skid into the parking lot at 8 o'clock, sprint into my office, you know, do the bare minimum and then leave when the clock strikes 5 o'clock. And it does send a strong message when you can be reliable and punctual.
Yeah. So this is something that is just a foundational thing that even if you're a great worker, if you don't do this, it's hard to ever make a good impression on your boss. If you're late to meetings or late to work. I remember I think my mom used to tell me I was going to be late to my own funeral because I had such a terrible habit around this. And somewhere along the line in my mid 20s, I changed, probably because I had a boss that was really grilling me about the clock. But if you're not naturally good with time, you can change this habit. And there are a few things that will make such an impression on your boss as being on time to work and to important meetings.
Yeah. And I probably learned this, you know, differently than most people will because I was in law enforcement and I couldn't tell my sergeant that, you know, I know my shift starts at 5:30 a.m., but, you know, golly gee, that's pretty early. So I think I'll stroll in about 6:15. You know, my shift started. That means I had to be ready to be out on the street and respond to calls. I couldn't meander in. But, and I know it's a tough one. In today's day and age, you know, there's this argument of, well, you know, if I'm going to stay 5 minutes late, then that means I get overtime. And, you know, if your boss is asking you to stay an hour late or 2 hours late or something like that, yeah, absolutely. You deserve overtime. But if you're just showing that, hey, I want to do a good job, I'm committed to this place, you know, 5 minutes out of your day is not going to kill you. And it's going to send a strong message that you want to be part of what's going on at the organization.
Yeah. So managing ourselves, I know Harvard Business School talks a lot about that. And part of managing yourselves is learning how to manage your own time. So what is the second tip that you have for us today?
Yeah. The next big thing is becoming the brand. And what I mean by that is research the company you're going to work for and actually want to be part of that message. Now, we've all had to take jobs that we did not love, because we had to pay bills. And so that may be the case that you're in right now. You're just trying to get a job so that you can put food on the table and a roof over your head. That's okay. But as you start to explore, where do I want to work? What do I want to do? You know, find a company that you truly believe in and then learn about them and really become a brand ambassador for your organization. That's going to send a great message to the people that you work with, to your supervisors, to your clients. But the other great thing that you're going to take from that is when you go, if you decide to move on to another company, you're going to send the message that, hey, I'm a strong brand ambassador. When you bring me on, I'm a true champion for this brand. And if you decide to start your own company, now you've already got the experience of building a brand. And so I think that sends so many messages to your employer, to your leaders that you're trying to get in front of that, hey, I'm fully on board and I want to be here.
Yeah, that's so important. I went to a conference several years ago with Daniel Harkavy, who I frequently talk about on our podcast because he's had made such an impression in my life. But the first thing he said at the conference, he told this story about complaining about his boss, and his dad told him very early on, "Hey, it is your job to make your boss look good." And so I think knowing your boss's brand, knowing what is important to them is just something that will help you to stand out as an employee more than almost anything, like really knowing what's important to them and representing that well.
Yeah, absolutely. The next one I have on the list is social media. Now, this is a hot topic of, hey, my personal life is my personal life. What I do in my personal life shouldn't have any bearing on my work life. But let's be real. The fact is we're seen by people and there's impressions that are made. So if you're going to go live a life worthy of a Las Vegas VIP, MVP, you don't necessarily have to post that on social media. You know, if you want to be seen as a professional and somebody that's respected in the hallway, you know, you don't have to put the latest, wildest party that you went to on social media. And you can say, well, people shouldn't judge me or whatever you want to say about that, but we're all human. We take these pictures of people and whether they're in a different context or we may not even understand, you know, that it was somebody's 50th wedding anniversary. It just looks like a wild raging party. We're going to store that information away in our brain, whether we like it or not. And so, you know, I hear people that have been passed up for promotions or even passed up for jobs. From personal experience, when I was a police officer, we had a guy who was in backgrounds. And obviously, I'm not giving any names, so it's probably okay for me to share this. But he was going to get a job offer, and we went to a social media page, and he had been out shooting, you know, guns and rifles. And these got a bottle of bourbon in his hand, and he says, you know, like, great combination, guns and whiskey or something like that. And we went, man, I don't think this guy's probably a good candidate for a job. And, you know, it's good that we found that out about him, but it certainly torpedoed his future in law enforcement because of that kind of stuff that he posted. So, you know, make sure that you're keeping your brand of professionalism in all aspects. And you also have to understand, which we've been teaching our kids, no matter what you post and no matter how you have your settings on Facebook or Instagram or Snapchat, if it's all set to private, those pictures are not private. They're not going to stay private. If you post something that's crazy, somebody's going to snap a photo of it and it's going to float around somewhere. If you have a coworker on your Instagram and you post, you know, your bikini pictures at the beach, I guarantee that those are going to circulate. So, you know, be careful with what you're posting.
Yeah. So this is such an important message in our current generation, is just being very careful how we represent ourselves online. So a question that for people to ask themselves is, you know, are you representing yourself the way that you want to? Is it portraying the image that you want out there for the public eye to kind of assess you? Yeah. So extremely important to be careful with social media and make sure that you're being purposeful and deliberate and cautious with that.
Yeah. And that goes to making statements on political issues as well. You've got to be careful with that. And I know we, as human beings, we want to not be neutral, right? We want to take a stand, which is great. You just have to be careful in the way that you do that and choose the right platform for it. And you have to understand, if you do make stands on social media, there can be consequences, good or bad. I mean, you might find a company that says, hey, I'm really with the message that you just posted. Or you might have a company that says, I'm really against the message that you posted. And you just have to be comfortable with that and not surprised when there are consequences.
Yeah. And speaking of representing yourself through social media, you also have a tip on how to dress in the workplace. Why is that important?
You know, dress appropriately. I that's a tough one. Again, I'm touching on some hot button subjects that, you know, HR departments pull their hair out with. But you have to understand that if you come into an environment that's super casual and you wear a three-piece suit, you know, and you decide, well, I'm going to dress above everybody because I'm going to be their boss someday, you're probably not going to fit in real well. Your team's immediately going to be kind of off put. It may end up being a joke or something, but walking in the door on day one, when you know it's a polo shirt and khakis kind of environment and you're wearing something fancy, or if you know it's a conservative environment on the flip side and you come in with a bright, you know, Hawaiian shirt or, you know, some seductive dress. But, you know, you've got to be aware of your environment, and it will immediately put you in the negative on the scale of 0 to 10. And so now you've got to climb out of that hole just because you wanted to express yourself as an individual. You know, if you're that concerned about the environment and I don't like how stuffy they are, then gosh, you know, don't go work there. You already know that environment when you're coming into it. So don't go work there. Go work at Google or somewhere that's casual and you can sit around on beanbag chairs and, you know, throw things to your coworkers. Don't go work for some stuffy law firm that is, you know, black tie and you know, pressed shirts and all that stuff, and be surprised when they object to your casual work attire.
Yeah, and social psychology, I don't know the exact study, but it says that we form judgments about people within like 1/10 of a second based on their visual appearance. I know in this day and age, we don't like to say that or think about that. We want to be accepted for how we look, which is really important. But in the workplace, it would be thoughtful and wise to consider how you represent yourself and how you dress for success in order to get a job or a position or a career that supports you and your potentially your family, if you have one, or your family in the future. Extremely important. Really great book called The Magic of Thinking Big that a lot of entrepreneurs rate as one of the most important books they ever read. And in that book, there's an entire chapter on why it's important to dress for success.
Number five, don't just bring complaints, but bring solutions. You know, everybody in the world can point to something negative. That's not creative and that's not innovative. And sometimes there's just things you need to ignore. So, you know, if you don't like where the stapler is in the office, either just move it or just move on. Like it's really not that big of a deal. But if you see an actual problem that needs to be addressed, don't just come to your boss and complain about it and say, oh my gosh, this is going on and I can't believe it's so horrible. You know, come up with a solution. And as a leader, as a supervisor, I appreciate that because I'm not always the smartest guy in the room. And I love to hear better solutions than what I'm going to come up with.
Yeah, I was going to say, generally speaking, the higher up your leader, your boss is, the less time they have. And so I used to have a team member a few years ago that thought they were being really helpful by bringing constant problems. Like every day, it's like, hey, Dr. Houston, did you know this was going on? Hey, did you know this was going on? I found this problem today. Your boss doesn't need more to do and more problems to fix. And often, if your boss is really busy, they might be likely to accept any kind of halfway decent proposal. So it's an opportunity for you to shine and to be a problem solver and to propose solutions, but don't just drop problems in your boss's lap.
Yeah.
Not helpful.
Number six I've got is admit when you're wrong and apologize well. This is a tough one, especially when you come out of college or into a new company and you're trying to prove yourself and your knowledge base. It takes a lot of courage to do this one. But here's the thing. Everybody knows when you've screwed up. I mean, let that settle for a minute. They already know it. So you might as well just own it and apologize and say, dang it, I made a mistake. You know, here's what I plan to do to learn from it and to move on from it. And apologize to people if you said something wrong that hurt their feelings, if you let them down by not finishing your end of a project, you were late for a meeting. We already talked about that, but just apologize. That goes a long, long way.
Let me say very clearly too that apologizing is a really rare skill in our society. I think if you're going to apologize well, people do some really stinky, ridiculous apologies these days. And it's really just leaves a bad taste in your mouth when you see a leader give just a terrible apology, right? Apologizing well and really owning it is so rare. And so if you do that in the workplace, whether you're a leader or you're just starting your first job, you're going to stand out. I guarantee you will stand out if you apologize really well, because very few people own their mistakes and really take responsibility for changing what they're doing.
Yeah. And even my teenage kids have picked up on this. I don't remember what the story was that they were telling me, but they were sharing that somebody apologized by saying, I'm really sorry you feel that way.
Terrible.
Hint number one, that is not an apology. I'm sorry that I said something that hurt your feelings. That's a lot different than I'm really sorry you feel that way.
Oh, and it's such an, I mean, we're not talking about marriage and parenting today, but we usually integrate that into our podcast. And it is, apologizing is something you need to model. We need to model for our children. And man, it's a helpful skill in marriage to learn how to apologize well. So let me give the best tips that I've ever gotten on apologies, because yes, I have researched this topic, probably because I need to do a lot of apologizing. If you just say, I am sorry that I did blank and that it caused you to feel that way, like take ownership, make it specific. And then shut up. Don't spoil your apology by adding a bunch of qualifying information. That's the best advice I've ever gotten on it. Just say it simple, clear, and short. All right.
Yeah. And one of the things I've heard from people is that they don't want to admit to their boss that they're wrong. They don't want to look bad in front of their boss. But I can tell you this, if you have a boss that does not respond well when you apologize and they rip you for screwing up and they go off on a tirade, you don't want to work for them anyway. So just take the chance that most people are going to accept an apology and say, okay, all right, let's move forward. If they don't, then move on, find a different job, find a different boss.
Yeah, and I would say that moves us really nicely into number seven, which is why it's so important to develop emotional intelligence.
Yeah, and this is something we've talked about several times, I think, on the podcast. Either I don't remember if we did an episode on it or if we've just incorporated this into many different episodes, but really become self-aware and learn how to read people. Learn how to be funny at the right times. Learn how to, you know, read the room. You know, be confident but not cocky. One of the big things that I learned, you know, probably a decade ago, which I wish I had learned much earlier in life, was to respond, not react. Because when you react emotionally to something, you're getting hijacked and you're going to say and do things that are not representative of your character and probably not going to benefit you in the long run, versus taking a deep breath and responding properly.
Yeah, we don't have adequate time to do this justice. We could probably do 12 podcasts on emotional intelligence. But just to let people know, there's a very famous Harvard psychologist, Daniel Goleman, who wrote several books, many books on the topic of emotional intelligence and why it's so important in the workplace. And as a leader, you've got to be self-aware and aware of how others are perceiving you. That's kind of the essence of it. And that this skill of emotional intelligence is much more highly correlated with success than your intellect and technical skills. Because if you tick people off, they don't care how smart with you, generally speaking, they don't want to work with you. We've talked about in prior episodes, people generally will work with people they like and trust. And so emotional intelligence is the biggest part of that, I think.
Yeah, one of the things that I had written down here also is, as part of this emotional intelligence, is making sure you come in with a positive attitude. Nobody likes to be around, I like to say no one likes to work with Eeyore, if you know Winnie the Pooh. Nobody wants to be around a grump. It's not going to help your career. And it's not something that you can just will yourself into. I get that. But you can start to develop habits that will help, you know, a gratitude journal, focus on the positives. In fact, Craig Groeschel is a pastor that I listen to every once in a while. And he said, if you take two different birds and look at the way they see the day, you take a vulture and they fly around looking for dead things, decomposing things, versus a hummingbird flies around looking for the beautiful blooms and the colors and all those things. And, you know, his point was, be the hummingbird. Don't be the vulture. It's very easy to fly around, see all the dead, ugly things. You know, be the hummingbird, look for the bright spots. And that will go so far in influencing the people around you.
That's awesome. I love that metaphor.
All right. Number eight, continue to grow as a professional. So this is just that continuous growth, continuing to grow technically in your profession, but then also just as a person and a leader.
Yeah, that is so important. John Maxwell calls growth the great separator. And I always love that, because if you looked at a graph and you envision someone growing over time, like you're building skills and character just a little bit every single year for 20, 30, 40 years of your career, if you are going to outpace the person that's very naturally gifted but does not invest in their growth process on an ongoing basis. There's just no question about your growth is going to help you so much in the long run.
Yeah, absolutely. Number nine, always do the right thing. I know that sounds super cliche, and it's something that I teach my kids, we teach our kids, is that if you're always doing the right thing, you have nothing to worry about. Because you have to understand that morals and laws are not flexible. If you break the law or you commit some egregious moral act at work, you're either going to be looking over your shoulder wondering if anybody saw that, if you're going to get caught, or you are going to get caught and you're going to have consequences for that. So if you're always doing the right thing, you never have to worry about any of that stuff. And if you're in an organization that encourages you to break the law or commit immoral acts, then you need to jump ship and you need to go, you know, find something different. That is not the kind of place you want to work in. And I just remembered this verse in Proverbs 22:1. This is the Good News Translation, so it's probably a little different than most people have heard. But it says, if you have to choose between a good reputation and great wealth, choose a good reputation. And it's so important. It's not something that you can get back immediately once you lose your reputation. So always do the right thing.
Yeah. And, you know, a few months ago, I was struggling with something and your text back to me said, it's never wrong to do the right thing. And it made my decision so easy to really just be thinking about who am I? What are my values? What do I do in this situation? And it made my choice. All of us, I was struggling with something and it made it very, very, very easy. So it was just an awesome tip. One other great Bible verse for anybody listening that some of our audience is faith-based. Colossians 3:23 says, whatever you do, work with all your heart as if you're working for God, not people. So I want to encourage you that if you're just entering the workforce or if you're struggling with your job, please keep in mind that God is your ultimate CEO with your holding your performance evaluation that you'll be given at the end of your life. And it's not your human boss at work who is flawed. Every person is flawed. Every leader is flawed. There is no perfect leader. So just know that you're ultimately working for God if you're a person of faith, and keep that in mind at all times, especially when you're frustrated in the workplace. So just in closing, I just want to add a quick, like, simple recap. If you're reliable, show up on time, you work really hard, like have heart, great work ethic, and you're teachable, like you can take feedback from your boss, you're going to get noticed and stand out in the workplace, because there are a lot of people that don't do that. And if you're listening to our podcast, you're probably a growth-oriented person that wants to be intentional, that wants to stand out. And these things will really help you to be successful in the workplace. So Clint, do you have any final closing comments for us?
The whole idea of this podcast is we want you, the listener, to succeed in all aspects of life. And that's why we pick topics that, you know, sometimes are family oriented, or, you know, how to be a better business owner, better communicator, things like that. We just thought this was a timely one. And I've actually had feedback from some of our listeners that this was something they wanted to hear, you know, how to prepare to get into the workforce. So, you know, I just hope that you take these tips. Some of them I have some experience with, either personally being in the learning chair or as a manager. And then others are coming from experts in the field saying, hey, this is really, really critical for your success. And so I hope that you take these to heart. Our passion and our hope is that you start living the best life that you possibly can and live on purpose. So thank you for joining us today. We're super excited to have you, and we hope that you tune in for future episodes. Please go into your favorite podcast platform and subscribe to our podcast, and even share it with a friend. If you're super ambitious and you want to help us out, we'd love to get some reviews from you as well. So thanks for taking the time. If you want to catch up with Parker or I, we're both on LinkedIn, and you can go to Parker's website, leadyoufirst.com, if you'd like to connect directly with him. Until then, keep climbing your next peak.